Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. Our organization was founded in November 2008, and we're going into our 15th year now. We have over 1,300 members in 29 states, including Colorado. Starting in 2023, we will meet both on webinars and in person. And we thank you for listening to our podcast as well. We're excited to share the stories of healthcare leaders across the country. Today, I'm excited to visit with Brian Wong, MD and CEO of the Bedside Trust and author of Heroes Need Not Apply and the Trusted Handbook. His consulting team includes one of our Denver Medical Study Group members, Dr. Deborah Parsons, University of Colorado School of Medicine. Dr. Wong, thank you for joining me today. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Good to be with you here, Chris, and hello, DMSG Group. I'm a family physician. I practiced 10 years in family medicine in Seattle, Washington, which is where I still reside. I had a career also as a physician executive, and then for the last 30 years, have been consulting to healthcare organizations across the country for the last 20 to 25 years, specializing in the nature of trust and building trusted cultures in healthcare organizations across the country.
As the CEO of Bedside Trust, Brian, I see the title Culture Change Consultant or Culture Change Expert. What are you as a culture change consultant?
I'm an expert in culture. And what is culture? Culture is behavior. It's a system of beliefs and rules that govern behavior. And the most important word in that definition is behavior, to the point that culture is behavior. Organizational culture is organizational behavior. You take the behaviors in aggregate, our daily interactions and behaviors with each other in service of our patients, from top to bottom throughout the organization, you roll them up together in aggregate, and that begins to define the culture of your organization. Our behaviors are also our habits and our reflexes. So in a lot of ways, the culture of an organization is composed of the reflexes of the people in that organization. And finally, the culture you have is the culture you have. It may not be the one that you want, but it's the one that you have. And we are perfectly aligned for the cultures we currently have.
You know, you've worked with 25-bed rural hospitals all the way up to 500-bed healthcare systems as they attempt to improve patient care, particularly significant now during this workforce shortage that was magnified by the COVID pandemic. What culture of patient care exists in most health hospitals or healthcare systems that needs to be improved, and how can they effectively work to improve their cultures?
The default culture in healthcare today, sadly, and I think compounded by the pandemic, to me, is one of almost every man for himself, every person for themselves. Another way of putting that is we're all in survival mode. We're just kind of hunkered down, dug in, blinders on, tunnel vision, just focused on getting through the day much. And so I do see that as the sad state of affairs in almost all healthcare organizations today. The idea of Band-Aid, to me, a Band-Aid for cultural problems could be summed up in two words: process improvement or process improvement initiatives. In other words, if a process improvement initiative is a Band-Aid, we've got plenty of Band-Aids going on in healthcare right now. We've got tons and tons of initiatives to the point where, as an industry, we refer to it as initiative overload. So when you culture is another approach to solving problems and improving the condition of your organization in your service to patients, in a way that's far more effective than process improvements could ever be. And so my message to healthcare leaders is first understand the power of culture, recognize the power of culture, and then you can be in a position to harness the power of culture in such a way that you improve your organization by keeping your eye on the ball and not chasing the scoreboard.
You know, culture, as I've heard it in the last year or so, is a relatively new term that's being talked about. However, culture has existed for years and years, has it not? Just not been labeled that, has it?
Yeah, it's the most important thing that we haven't paid attention to in healthcare. It's always been there. Like I said, the culture you have is the culture you have. It may not be the one you want. And so what we've done is instead of being intentional about building a culture for a healthcare organization, we've let it happen. And one of the things that I like to do with my audiences, Chris, is I like to tell them that it's culture is behavior, behavior is habit, habit is reflex. So let me share with you a reflex of mine that I've concluded is a bad habit, but which for many, many years I thought was central to my success. And I test this with audiences across the country. I say, I'm just going to mention a bad habit. I'm going to see if you recognize it. If you recognize it, I'm just going to give you half a sentence. And if you recognize it, give me the other half. And let's see how many people give the same answer. Let's see if we do it in unison, and let's see how long it takes us. So let me test this out with you, Chris. I'll say the first half of the sentence. It's a bad habit of mine. If you want it done right.
Well, you better do it yourself.
Yes, absolutely. So how long did that take you? It took you about 2 seconds to say it. Imagine I'm in an audience of 500 people, and I just say to them, if you want it done right, 500 people in a second say, do it yourself, which tells me it's a universal habit. And it's a universal habit in healthcare across the country. And if it's a habit, it means it's a daily occurrence. We do it regularly. So if you're in an organization that has a workforce of 2,500 people, what that tells me is 2,500 times a day, somebody somewhere is saying to themselves, if you want it done right, do it yourself. Let's unpack that a little bit. At the moment that you find yourself saying it, is anybody happy? No, you're not happy. You're probably annoyed. And if you're annoyed, what's your opinion of your teammates at the minute you say, if you want it done right, do it yourself? Is it positive or negative? It's negative, because if it was positive, you wouldn't have to do it yourself. So the sentence that comes before, if you want it done right, do it yourself, it wouldn't surprise me if it's, I'm surrounded by idiots. And that's why, if you want it done right, do it yourself. Now, do it yourself is just a step away from it's every man for himself around here, every person for themselves. We may not have designed our organization around this idea of every man for himself, but that's what we have devolved to. And that's been compounded by the pandemic.
You know, what is the evolution of a cultural practice from a patient physician perspective, and also from a physician healthcare executive perspective?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Chris, because it's been very important in the evolution of how I have approached healthcare organizations. And what I have done most recently is approach an organization like I would have approached my patients back when I was in practice. So people ask me, you know, if I miss my practice anymore, and I say, I do miss the adulation of patients saying, you know, Dr. Wong, there isn't anybody who's listened to me quite like you do. But I've also like to say that I still practice. I just have different patients these days. And my patients are now organizations. And organizations come to me with symptoms in a cultural context. And what my job today is to work up those organizations in such a way that it helps me paint a picture for them about what their culture is, identify what the problems and opportunities are with their culture, make a unifying diagnosis about what the problem is with their culture, and then put in a treatment plan to help them address their culture. So that the approach I've taken has been informed by my socialization, professionalization as a physician, and it mirrors in a lot of ways how executives think and make decisions for their organizations as well.
You know, I had a conversation recently with a nurse who made the comment that, you know, I'm not sure my supervisor trusts me, and I don't know if I trust him or her.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to the question of what is the trusted culture approach?
Yes. Well, the foundational idea behind a trusted culture is to understand that no matter what kind of healthcare organization we may be leaders of, when you consider the diversity of your membership, Chris, whatever kind of healthcare organization you lead, fundamentally, foundationally, at its core, we are all in the business of providing what matters most to patients. Everything that I've done in building trusted cultures begins with this idea that we are in the business of providing what matters most to patients. And then there's two related questions that stem from that. If that's the case, what matters most to patients? So you have to know for sure the answer to the question, what matters most to patients. We'll get into that when we have our webinar. And then the second question is, who do you trust? And what does it take to be trusted? And when you understand the answers to those two questions, what matters most to patients and who do you trust, what you find is the answers are interchangeable. That in fact, what matters most to patients is to be trusted. And to be trusted is to provide what matters most to patients. And when you understand that we're in the business of providing what matters most to patients, and you understand the answers to those two questions, what matters most to patients and who do you trust, you then have some new powerful insights into how to build a trusted culture.
Very impressive. I learn something each time we talk, Brian. I really appreciate that. There is a concern among health system leaders about quiet quitting. How would the trusted culture approach help workers be trusted or to trust their management team to eliminate that issue of quiet quitting?
Yes. So quiet quitting is, I think we've always known that that phenomenon exists. It's just, again, intensified and magnified with the pandemic. For me, I used to call it laziness or poor work ethic. People don't have the same ethic that we used to have, and that people in the generation before us used to say, you know, people don't work like we used to work. We don't have the same kind of work ethic, don't have the same desire and drive. It's a complicated question, Chris. But what I think is part of the problem, we don't know how to find common ground with each other. So we've devolved into an environment of us versus them. So us could be executives, them could be the workforce. Us could be the workforce, them could be the executives. And we don't really, we don't understand what makes each other tick, what matters most to each other. And therefore, we don't know how to be trusted to each other. So if you start with the patient in mind, and you ask the question, what matters most to patients, and you focus that patient, you think of that patient as somebody you care about. And what you find that what matters most to the patient that you care about is to be trusted. And then you identify what it means to be trusted. That's a universal set of attributes. It's not just what patients expect. It's what we expect from each other. And when we understand that and provide that to each other, that's when you can begin to build trust between staff and executives in a way that can mitigate, if not eliminate, quiet quitting. The flip side of that is if you don't know what matters most and you don't know what it means to be trusted, one of the risks is not just the absence of being trusted, but the opposite of being trusted, what I call being distrusted. And when those opposite behaviors start creeping in, that has a powerfully erosive effect on your ability to build trust. So to me, it's about understanding the distinction between being trusted and being distrusted. Those are all behavioral in nature. Behavior is the word for culture. And that's why we come back to the subject of why organizational culture is so important and such an untapped lever point for us to improve not only the health of our organizations, but the health of the patients that we're taking care of and the health of our workforce.
A lot of this has gone on for years, but I think what's happened in the last 2 or 3 years is with the COVID pandemic, these issues have been magnified. And quiet quitting is kind of becoming, you know, I need to have a balance between my business life and my personal life. Is that what you're seeing and working with health systems now? And how, if so, how are they dealing with it?
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. You know, when you're in survival mode, you become much more self-centered. You think more of self-protection than patient protection. You think more about, oh God, nobody, you say this to yourself, Chris, nobody else is looking out for me. I got to take care of myself. And so self-care is, in a way, taken to its extreme, it leads to quiet quitting because we become so self-absorbed in our own ability to protect ourselves from the onslaught of our bosses, from the onslaught of the environment, from the onslaught of regulatory agencies and malpractice attorneys and insurance companies, that we become much more shielded and withdrawn and hunkered down, for lack of a better word, just kind of siloed, entrenched, and protected against the environment.
You know, Brian, we've got a lot going on, and you've done a great job of sharing here today. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners that we haven't talked about?
Let me just share with you two more thoughts, Chris. I am a firm believer that you can change your culture by doing less of one thing, not more of everything. Healthcare has chosen to do more of everything through process improvement initiatives and what's resulted in initiative overload. You can't change your organization one initiative at a time. So that's one element that I want to emphasize. The second element that I want to emphasize is, while we are on the subject of quiet quitting, it's very easy to blame the environment, to blame your bosses, to blame other people, to blame patients, to blame the situation for why you have chosen to quietly quit, why you have gone into self-protection mode, why you may have chosen what I call distrusted behaviors. But it's a matter of choice, and we can choose a different set of responses and a different set of behaviors. And the reason I know we can do that is the author, is this one quote: between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space, I have the power to choose my own response. And with that response lies my growth and my freedom. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. Now, the author of that quote is Dr. Viktor Frankl. And Dr. Viktor Frankl survived 4 Nazi death camps in World War II, including Auschwitz. And he was in that Nazi death camp experience where he had this idea that these prison guards can do unspeakable things to me, but what they can't take away is how I'm going to choose to respond. And I'm going to choose by working on my attitude, thinking more positively, thinking about my loved ones, thinking about liberation, and then what I need to do to survive, which is improving my work ethic, to do every a menial task in detail so that I become valuable to the prison guard so they won't kill me. Now, Dr. Viktor Frankl he will say that he had good luck and good fortune on his side, but he'll also say his attitude was key. And if Dr. Viktor Frankl can improve his attitude in the depths of a Nazi death camp, all of us today in the post-COVID world can also create space between stimulus and response and make different decisions and choices about how we're going to choose to behave, which will then change our culture.
Fantastic, Brian. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to be able to visit with you and to learn more about the trusted culture. Look forward to hearing from you as you present to our Denver Medical Study Group in early March and learn more at that time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I look forward to being with you again, Chris. Thank you.